Hello GWA, this is Lady Vicarian, and I am here to answer all those burning questions that you left on my AMA. I must say that you guys delivered beautifully on the questions. I have a very eclectic range, which is great. I won't waste too much time on an introduction. Those of you listening either know me or are about to find out a little bit more about me. So why don't we kick off with the first question? And it comes from Todster123, who asks, if you had to choose between watching a certain Mass Effect character, we both know who, showering and having hardcore sex with Rex, or having him die in Mass Effect 1 with no restarting ever again, which option and why? Well, the answer to this one is very much a no-brainer. I have watched enough gay porn in my lifetime to feel that I am ready for some Turian on Krogan action, so I think I'd just prop up a chair, sit there with my cup of tea, and quite happily watch them go at it, because who wants to see Garrus die? I certainly don't. I've managed to avoid it in every playthrough of Mass Effect that I've done, so yeah, we will be watching some Turian on Krogan action. Okay, our next questions come from Low Growl, and the first question is, if you had to describe your perfect audio to listen to, what would it be like? Well, firstly, I think confidence and a good strong voice are a must. Those both relate to the third must-have, which is some form of immersion, whether it's a ramble fap or a scripted piece or even an improv. Being able to draw your listener in is a big deal, especially when you're talking about fantasies. If you're wanting somebody to, you know, if you want somebody to forget that they're currently, you know, sat in their office or in their bedroom with, you know, their trousers halfway down their knees, then, yeah, you do need some degree of confidence. And I think those are more important to me than any kind of tag, because I don't think there's really any one tag that will draw me in. I'm an equal opportunist. I will sort of listen to new people. I get a feel for their voice and whether or not it's for me. So my perfect audio would not be down to tags. It would definitely be down to the voice, the confidence, and the ability to immerse me in that particular scene. Okay, and the second question is, tell us what you like to do to really relax, and how do you really celebrate if something went great? Well, I think my days of going out and getting blind stinking drunk to celebrate are well and truly over. I am more likely, especially when it comes to relaxing, I will more likely be at home or be at a friend's, probably imbibing quite a lot of THC, probably gaming or catching up on the latest series that I'm currently watching. It's a very dull answer, I must admit. I am not a party girl, or at least I'm not anymore. I've kind of lost the drive for going out drinking and coming home potentially wearing somebody else's clothes. As for celebrating, well, I firmly believe that you can't really celebrate properly on your own, so I'm usually at a friend's place, probably doing the same thing I usually do, but with a little bit more excitement. Alright, okay, so our next lot of questions, or just the one, comes from Silvertongue. And Silvertongue asks, what is your most memorable sexual moment in which you and your partner just stopped and laughed your ass off? The most recent one, I was having a bit of playtime with a partner and they were doing countdowns to climax. And they had started counting down in English, which was fine. I was busy, you know, working myself up to reaching that zero point, which was wonderful. And then they mixed it up a bit and started speaking in a language that I do not know. And I realised at that point that I hadn't exactly been counting along, I'd just been listening out for the numbers, which meant I totally lost my place, utterly and completely. I had no idea where I was on the count. And instead of saying anything, I just burst out laughing. Because the whole situation was hilarious to me at that point. I had lost count merely because I didn't know the numbers. And of course they laughed along as well because, you know, it's funny and sex should be funny. The next questions come from Switch and Bitch. And the first question is, which of your audios are you most proud of and why? Well, for me, it's not actually any of my sexual audios at all. It was the set of monologues that I did for V for Vendetta. There was a monologue challenge and I threw a few up. And I got a message from somebody who came from a country where issues that were displayed in the film were a reality for them. And, you know, some of the things that I said in the monologue struck home and they were extremely grateful. And it was really weird it was really, really nice to get that kind of feedback for something that, you know, I just thrown up casually. I mean, I had no idea what effect it would have on people. It was just me, you know, being an idiot into a microphone. But to know that it had that kind of impact on, you know, even one person, that definitely made me feel something and, you know, made me a little more proud of the audios that I'd done. And Switch and Bitch's second question is, if you had to only play one game for the rest of your life, what would you choose? Well, anybody who knows me already knows the answer that I'm going to come up with. But it is, first and foremost, Mass Effect. It was a series that ran, at least 5 years before it got to sort of like the third. And over 5 years, you got to know the characters really, really well. The story drew you in, had you waiting for the next installment. Yes, I too nerd-raged when it came to the ending of the third one. I don't think there was a single person that didn't in some shape or form. However, you know, I sort of come to terms with it, forgiven BioWare and downloaded the DLC, and yeah, okay, they made up for it a bit. But, you know, a bad ending did not ruin the fact that the entire series was just absolutely amazing. So if I could only play one for the rest of my life, it would be Mass Effect. Next question comes from Koresnia, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. If I'm not, well, no, I tried. And Koresnia asks, what kind of audios or who do you like to listen to? Do you remember the first audio you listened to, and do they know? So I think I covered this a bit in Lowgrowl's question. First and foremost, it definitely has to be a good voice with a lot of confidence in it, enough to draw me into the scene. I am a sub, so I do listen to a lot of MDOM audios. But at the same time, I do listen to a lot of new stuff as well, because I very much feel that you do miss out if you stick to one sort of thing. There are a lot of talented performers, and if you're just sticking to one tag or just looking for the tags, you miss out on a lot of people. So I don't think there's any one perfect audio that you can listen to, in my case, definitely not. And as for the first audio that I listened to, that would have been Everdistant Utopia's audio, which I think was the Rape Seminar. And I was hugely impressed with that, and it was, you know, my first introduction into the GWA world. As for whether they know, I think they do. I think we had a conversation about it at one point. But if they don't, well, they may well do now. Koresnia's second question is, who's your favourite Game of Thrones character? Now, I actually had to think long and hard about this. I debated over a number of days, in fact, because there are so many characters that I get excited about when I see them up on the screen or when I see them kicking ass or doing something awesome. But for me, if I was pushed to answer, which I am at the moment, it would have to be Tyrion. And it's simply because there's just nobody like Tyrion, and his scope of intelligence just impresses me to no end. He has some of the best lines in the entire series. I mean, trial speech, well, that had me, you know, standing up and clapping, looking like an idiot in my friend's living room. So, yeah, it would definitely be Tyrion. Okay, and the next questions come from Deus Ex Machina. And his first question is, what made you decide to join our little slice of the interwebs? Well, I joined GWA for much the same reason as a lot of people did. I have trouble sleeping and I use ASMR quite a bit. And I was looking for ASMR audios because sometimes I find the videos a little bit distracting. So I was just looking for pure audio. And I clicked on a link which turned out to be completely not what I was expecting. But I am a very orally fixed person, and that's A-U-R, by the way, orally. So sound is very important to me, even in the bedroom. So to discover that there was this whole world of audios where people were quite happy to act out, you know, some of the most awesome fantasies. I mean, I looked through the website and it didn't take long for me to sort of think, yeah, you know what, this place is for me. Now, I did originally join with the sole intention of writing scripts. Because I thought all these amazing, talented people and I could make scripts for them, that would be no problem. And it didn't take me very long to be persuaded past my initial insecurities. Now, I would like to point out that be persuaded does not mean there was peer pressure, oh, you should do this. I started considering it, but there was always a blockage of, you know, I have so many insecurities, you could stuff them in the sack. And it took, you know, the patient and kind work of quite a few people to, you know, push me into doing that first one. And once I'd gotten that over and done with, it was, you know, becoming easier to do. So it wasn't a particularly long journey, but I'm definitely glad that I made it. The second question, which is mildly fucking insulting, and he knows it, is why is coffee superior to tea? And the answer is, it isn't. Third question, which would you rather fight, a horse-sized duck or five duck-sized horses? Now, being as I occasionally work with horses, and I am well aware of their capabilities of squishing you against things, or standing on you, or kicking out at you, I would say that I'd fight five duck-sized horses, because anything that's as big as a horse has the capacity to totally ruin you, completely by accident at times. I mean, horses have absolutely no spatial awareness, and I very much doubt a giant duck would have much in the way of spatial awareness either. So five duck-sized horses. Not going to guarantee I'd win that fight. All right. And the next question comes from Improcrastinable. If I've not pronounced that correctly, I do apologise. And their question is, what is the most absurd and best feedback you've received? I'll be honest, I've not really received much in the way of absurd. I've had a few people send me PMs about the sort of stuff that they'd like to do. You know, I've had the obligatory dick pics. None of that's particularly absurd. It's just people getting, you know, a little bit inspired about my audios. I don't trouble myself too much about those. They're not something I'm probably going to respond to, but at the same time, you know, yeah, thank you for the compliment. But as for absurd, I've not really gotten any yet. That is not a competition to send in the most absurd feedback just before my inbox gets inundated by people who think they're funny. You know who you are. And the best feedback I receive, again, I have to go back to the V for Vendetta monologues and the response that I got from that. I mean, it wasn't a, you know, they weren't particularly prolific, you know, they didn't get a load of upvotes, which I wasn't particularly expecting. It was a monologue and backstage. But to get that single response from a girl who was going through a very similar situation, and to know that it made them feel better in some way, that was worth like a million frickin' upvotes, to be honest. Right, the next question comes from Fruity Rumpus Factory, who wants me to read my favourite Pratchett scene out loud. So what I'm going to do is, my favourite scene is a little bit long, I'm going to do that at the end of this, so we will come back to that. Right, next set of questions come from Pretty Bookworm, And her first question is, if your life was turned into a movie, which actor would play you? The actress that I've most been compared to voice-wise and occasionally looks-wise is Claudia Black. So for continuity's sake, you know, if there had to be, it would probably be Claudia Black. Although she's rather taller than I am, but then again, so is everybody, so... Second question is, what is your favourite scene or quest in Dragon Age Inquisition and Origins? Note, I said Origins this time and not Oranges, as I tend to do. So, my favourite in Dragon Age Origins would probably be the Deep Roads. Now, a lot of people hated the Deep Roads, and I can understand why. It's huge, it's easy to get lost in, and there are darkspawn everywhere. But at the same time, I found it really, really interesting. I especially loved the run-up to the Broodmother, which was extremely creepy. You had that dwarven lass reciting in poem form all the awful things that had been done to them. And you learned the wonderful way that the Broodmothers were made, which was truly disgusting. So I found that deeply interesting and I loved it, whereas quite a few people did not. My favourite scene in Inquisition is probably the entirety of the Trespasser DLC. It's a very good DLC, especially if you did romance Solas. As Bookie well knows, she's seen my Twitch stream of Inquisition recently. And it just rounds it out quite nicely if you have done a romance with Solas. And to be fair, if you romance anybody, it rounds it up quite nicely. And it was just really good to see the Canary in action. You know, throughout the game, you're always sort of hearing about the possibility of a Canary invasion once they've decided we've fucked up the world enough as it is. And you kind of got an idea of that in the second game. But it's more sort of poignant in the DLC because you're seeing them in places like Val Royeaux, which is unheard of. And the last question is, which game is your all-time favourite? Well, we are once again back to Mass Effect. There has been very few games that can top Mass Effect, but in the interests of, you know, not repeating all of my answers, I would say if I had to pick a second game, then it would probably be The Last of Us. Because no game has ever provoked quite such an emotional response from me. I mean, that's what it's designed to do, definitely, and it worked. It worked within the first 15 minutes. I was bawling. So if you haven't played that and you do own a PS4 or a PS3, I highly advise playing it. Okay, next question comes from Not So Lone Wanderer, who says, I refuse to Google Orange March, tell me what it is. Now, to put this into context for other people who might be listening, the Orange March is an event that happens in the summer. Now, the reason this came up is that there is a thread in Backstage asking, what is the funniest thing that you've had to edit out of your audios? And my answer was the Orange March, because it consists of about 50 people with drums and whistles and God knows what else, and they do little circuits around the town centre, which unfortunately leads just underneath my window, which is fucking brilliant if you're recording at the time. But I can't put it into complete context, so what I'm going to do is I am right now going to Google it for you. So we are going to do... What I can tell you is that they do prefer that it's called the Orange Walk. But most people tend to just call it the Orange March. So let's have a look. Okay, so I will read the first paragraph on the wiki. Orange Walks are a series of parades held annually by members of the Orange Order on a regular basis during the summer in Ulster, and mostly in Scotland and occasionally in England and throughout the Commonwealth. These typically build up to 12th of July celebrations, which mark Prince William Orange's victory over King James II at the Battle of Boyne in 1690. Although the term march or parade is widely used in the media, the order prefers terms such as walk or demonstration. Orange walks have faced opposition from Catholics, Irish nationalists, Scottish nationalists, and those on the political left who see the parades as sectarian and triumphalist. Those who attend the procession, however, regard it as having a vital ceremonial significance. So, basically, somebody's ancestors killed somebody else's ancestors hundreds of years ago, and apparently these people feel a need to walk about it. Now, I am sure I've just insulted somebody there, but frankly, that's all I'm kind of getting from the wiki and from quite a lot of people who I've spoken to about the march who don't really feel it's necessary. I can't really give my opinion on whether it's necessary. All I know is that they are fucking irritating. Okay, so next set of questions come from Hey Hey Ho One. I don't even know if I pronounced that right, but you know, if you're going to have a funny name, I'm probably going to pronounce it wrong. Otherwise known as the Not So Angry German. And his first question is, what is the funniest joke you know? Well, nobody ever laughs at my jokes apart from one person, and her favourite joke of mine has always been, what is green and invisible? At which point, when they say, I don't know, you hold out your hand and say, this cabbage. And I just delivered that in the most deadpan way as possible, just to make it all the more unfunny, but there you go. Second question is, what is your favourite saying or quote from a famous person? And the second question is, what is your favourite quote or saying from a famous person? There has always been a line from Criminal Minds that has stuck with me quite a bit. And it was spoken by David Rossi, the character, who is played by Joe Mantegna. And the quote is, and I believe I've used it before in a questionnaire, scars only show you where you've been. They don't have to dictate where you are going. And the last question is, how exactly does it feel to take your bra off? Now, normally I'd make some sort of comparison with trussing up balls, but in the simplest explanation, imagine you've been doing a 12-hour shift in big old boots, and your feet have been sweating and swelling up in those boots for, you know, quite a few of those hours, and you finally get home, you take off those boots, you take off those socks, and the relief that you feel there, that is a fraction of what we feel when we take a bra off, because it's the most fucking wonderful feeling in the world. And it's one of the first things that I do when I get home. Okay, next question comes from Gator Growls. And his question is, what led you to thinking, I wonder if audio porn is a thing I like? To be fair, there really wasn't a period of thinking. I heard it and my brain and body went, yep, we'll do with that. That's for us. So it was a very simple decision. I heard it, I listened to a few other people, and it was very much a case of, yes, this is the place for me. Second question is, what trait do you feel is most important for a male performer to have if you are going to get off? What trait shuts you down? So again, we are going to go back to confidence. Confidence is a big thing. If somebody is nervous, you know, if they're not quite sure of what they're doing, it's immediately apparent to me. It doesn't mean that I'll stop listening to the audio, because I'm always interested in listening to new performers, but it won't have quite as visceral an effect on me. So confidence is a huge, huge thing when it comes to performing, I think. Mostly because if they aren't enjoying it, I'm not enjoying it. And I think that goes for people who have grown a bit sort of weary with doing audios, and they're just putting them out for the sake of, you know, keeping themselves relevant in the community. I think that once you start feeling a bit weary, it's time to sort of take a step back and just enjoy yourself, because it's supposed to be fun at the end of the day. It's not supposed to be a job. All right, the next lot of questions come from My Erotica Mind. And it's the 24-hour ultimate. And the first part to these questions is, if you only had 24 hours of life, what would you do? I would probably get up in the morning, spend the morning with my best friend, you know, mucking out the horses, taking them out for a ride, I would then probably go back to her place and completely obliterate my brain, eat anything that I wanted to, spend time speaking to people that I know online. I mean, these are very, very simple things. I mean, I'd like to say I'd like to do the one thing that I've always wanted to do, which is cage diving with great whites. But that would absolutely depend on whether I could teleport, to be fair, or whether I had fair warning enough to fly somewhere that had the capacity to do that for me. But in reality's sake, I would probably spend as much time with my friends as I could. Second is, if you had a penis for 24 hours, what would you do? I would probably sit on GWA for a number of hours and jack myself off into a coma. I'm sorry, I know maybe people were sort of waiting for a more colourful or more exciting course of action, but no, I would probably once I'd finished staring at it in the mirror and giggling to myself whilst trying to do a helicopter, it would probably be all down to masturbation. Okay, if you could live inside of your favourite horror movie for 24 hours, would you survive and how? Considering my favourite horror movie is Aliens, and considering the body count in Aliens, I would have to say, unless I morphed into Ellen Ripley, no, I would not survive. I think I would probably be eaten. I might die in some, famous redeeming last stand, but I would probably get eaten. I would not survive. If you find out that your last year was just a dream, that you slept for 24 hours, what would you do? I would breathe a fucking sigh of relief. And that's all I'm saying on that subject. There is a deep and meaningful conversation in there, but not one that I'm willing to share with too many people. But I would probably breathe a sigh of relief. And the last, a non-24-hour question. If you wake up one day and find out that your life was a lie, that you are 10 years old again and it is time for school, what would you do? Well, I'd be pulled in two different directions because, again, I would breathe a sigh of relief to find out that the last 36 years was something of a lie, or the last 10 years. And then I would probably be very upset because then I'd have to do school all over again, and I really, really hated school. If you're the smallest kid in class in every class, all the way through up to high school, yeah, your life isn't exactly easy at school. So I'd probably be pissed off that I have to go back. Next question is from Gondeep, who asks, how fast can you fly here for your favourite tea and scones? Well, sweetheart, as flattered as I am by the offer, you'd have to have a lot more to offer than tea and scones, because I can get those at a ready supply, and yeah, that's just not enough to convince me to fly all the way over to you, so you're gonna have to do better, mate. Right, next questions come from Jay Wild, who asks, what is your favourite toy and why? Well, recently that's become very apparent to me. Beforehand I might have to hum and ha about it, but it's definitely the tongue vibrator that I got from Love Honey, and cheerfully named Pikmin, because that's what it looks like. That thing is a little beast. It is highly addictive, despite the fact that it takes ages to charge up. And as I've said before, if you get one of those and you want to use it, plan to use it, because you can't just pick it up. It'll end up running out halfway through, and you'll get very, very frustrated. Jay also asks, what video game character do you most want to be, and why? Well, that one's easy. Commander Shepard, because she's badass. I mean, I don't really need to say any more than that. For this, if I was to pick one sole reason, and no, it's not the fact that she can bone Garrus, it would be that moment when she's standing on the Quarian homeworld face to face with a Reaper Dreadnought. I mean, enough said. Jay also asks, how many blankets do you own? Quite a few. I live in Scotland and I'm cheap, so rather than put the heating on all the time, I would just bury myself under the blankets. I have about six. Now, I don't tend to use them all at once unless it's really, really cold, At which point, getting out of bed and going to pee is like an Olympic sport. And lastly, Jay asks, if you had to describe your three favourite GWA friends as video game characters, who would they be and why? Well, I'm going to start off first of all with Jay herself. If I was pushed to say which video game character she would be, it would actually be a mix between Cassandra from Inquisition and Avalyn from Dragon Age 2. Both are very, very strong characters. They really do not take any shit from anybody else. But on the other side, that they do have their own vulnerabilities. They will hide them, but they are still a human being, and I think it's important to remember that. Secondly, now I am probably going to die for this, but I'm going to go and say it anyway. So Todster123 reminds me very heavily of Handsome Jack from the Borderlands series, mostly because they are two of the most sarcastic people that I know, and I think they would fit well in a sharing role. I'm really going to die for that because he does not like Handsome Jack. And lastly, Pretty Bookworm, who reminds me a lot of Quistis from Final Fantasy VIII. Both are very bookish characters. Quistis was actually a teacher. They're both very sensible people, but they are not above kicking some ass as and when is needed. Okay. So the next question, and I knew one of these was going to come up. Okay, so to put this question into context before I read it out, I adore lasagna to the point where I am probably, despite the fact that I'm neither ginger nor huge, I am probably the human embodiment of Garfield when it comes to lasagna. So this might make this question a little bit more relevant to people who don't know that. And the question is from your heavy metal lover, who asks, if you had to choose between never being able to climax or never again being able to eat lasagna, which would you choose? Now, while I'm fairly sure this was supposed to be a difficult decision for me, it really, really isn't. Because as much as I love lasagna, there are a whole host of other foods that I absolutely adore, which I could replace lasagna with and, not be too worried. I'd be sad, but, it wouldn't be detrimental. Whereas if I was never ever again able to climax, I would turn into a very, very grumpy, horrible person who would begrudge everybody else's fun times. So I think in that case, it would definitely be I would choose never again to be able to eat lasagna. All right, the next set of questions comes from Pulsating Clouds, who asks, since joining GWA, has there been any new kinks you like to listen to, act out, and are there any you would be happy to actually try out? I wouldn't say there's anything sort of new that I've heard. I've always been quite aware of my kinks very early on. I would say I've gained a lot more of an appreciation, and I will say this now, there is a trigger warning. If you want to fast forward a little bit further on, that's absolutely fine. I am very briefly going to discuss this. I do have a new appreciation for rape play, but that would definitely be something that would only ever be approached with somebody that I completely trusted. And it does take a lot for that to happen. So, if I would be interested in trying it, but it would probably be a long time coming. And the second question, you like to name your toys. What would you call a poor quality toy? It gets you there, but it's nothing remarkable. I would probably call it spare parts, because it would most likely end up sitting in a box until all the other toys ran out, and it was the lone toy that, could be used. Next question, what has changed between recording your first audio and now? Well, again, it's definitely confidence. Don't get me wrong, I still get nervous about recording every single time that I record. But I'm less likely to, take the finished product, put it up, hit the button and run away for a few hours. You know, the community is hugely supportive, and, you know, it's gone a long way to pushing me towards trying out new things, not being so afraid of sucking at it. Next question. Would you be so kind as to explain the fascination towards Garrus Vakarion, and how would you feel if he wanted to bite you? Garrus is awesome, and that became apparent to me in the first game when he wasn't even a romance option. But he did make an awesome second in command. He was very much with me in pretty much every mission that I've done since picking him up in Mass Effect 1. He's always been there. The character is very well developed, and it was your first sort of real insight into Turians and what they're like. Although, you know, Garrus himself has always said he's a bit of a bad Turian, he's not very good at being Turian. It was very much a vulnerability to him, especially if you were romancing him. He was very, very awkward about it because it was an interspecies relationship. As for how I would feel about Garrus wanting to bite me, that dude could bite me pretty much anywhere that he wanted to. So that's a fairly simple answer. Cloud's next question is, you have been cordially invited to the European leg of International GWA Meetup. You decide to go. What do you do once you get there, and how long is it until you do something slightly embarrassing? Well, when I get there, I will probably have a drink or two before, you know, I could stop my nerves. But after that, I would pretty much spend time talking to absolutely everybody, and how long it would be until I did something embarrassing? Probably somewhere between the 6th and the 9th drink, more than likely. And finally, a bonus 6th question. I read this through. Okay. You've just had the most amazing sex in your life. Your legs are still shaking from the 5th orgasm in as many minutes. Breathless, gasping, and with a sheen of sweat on your brow, you look over to your lover, the Turian Garrus Vakarion. He stares at the ceiling, a look of shock on his face. You did that to him. Placing a hand on his cheek, you turn his face to yours, eyes looking at his eyes. You say to him, a cup of tea would make this evening perfect. His reply, tea? Hate the stuff? Tastes like alcohol piss. Well, my response to that, I would not kick Garrus Vakarion out of bed for not liking tea. I would kick him out of bed for the sole reason of his not liking tea does not stop him from getting up and making me one. Okay, and the last set of questions comes from 1Z2x3. And their first question is, now that you are doing more ramble faps, yay for more ramble faps, are you becoming more comfortable with unscripted audio? Very much so. I mean, I still have the initial nerves, and it does take me a few tries to actually get into an audio sometimes. But it's certainly not as scary as it used to be. Once you've done a couple of them, you kind of get a feel for it. And, you know, getting the feedback that I have gotten, you know, at least I know that when I'm doing these, people are going to enjoy them, and I'm not just wanking into the wind. Second question, would you be into doing unscripted audio collaboration with other men or women over Skype? Either way, would you like to listen to others' recording of that? When it comes to doing collabs, and I do have a few planned, I don't mind doing a collab over Skype, but it would have to be somebody that I was very comfortable with. I've only ever done one collab over Skype, and that was with Jay Wild. When we did the Hysterical Gaming. So, yes, but it would have to be somebody I trust. Somebody random who just wanted to do a collab. Well, I'm probably not going to do a collab with somebody completely random, to be fair. So I'm also quite unlikely to do a collab over Skype. And would I like to listen to others' recordings of this? It depends on my mood. There are occasions when I'm in the mood for a couple's audio, and there are occasions that I'm not. So, again, it would depend on my mood. I have enjoyed listening to them, but I am more of a solo artist person. Okay, next question. Would you be into recording yourself with other men or women in person? Either way, would you like to listen to other recordings of that? Given my self-confidence issues and the fact that I always do try and stay safe when it comes to internet and, you know, people that you don't necessarily know as well as you think you do, my answer to that would probably be a no. As to whether I would like to listen to others' recordings of that, again, it would depend on my mood. Next question. Do you think you are a more sexual person than most, or do you think that most people are more sexual than you? Neither. I think a lot of people aren't honest about their sexual needs, which is absolutely fine. You know, some people don't want to, you know, lay it all out there on the line. I'm a lot more open and I'm a lot more active in sort of discovering new stuff that I might like, but I don't think that makes me any more or less sexual than anybody. I am now 36, so I'm sort of heading towards that peak sexual time for women, apparently. Nobody told me that. So yeah, I don't think it makes a difference, to be honest. I don't think I'm any more or less sexual. Last question is, why do you think that not everyone is into making sexy audios on GWA? Well, again, we're coming full circle and we're coming back to confidence again. I know for a fact that if my confidence hadn't been boosted by other people, I certainly wouldn't have, you know, attempted an audio. I originally came to GWA to write scripts, and it took, you know, the work of, again, patient people reminding me that they've, you know, they've all started out the same way, working on building up my confidence. So again, I think there may be other reasons. Some people may just not want to do it, they just prefer to listen. Some people might not be comfortable with their own voice or even comfortable with sharing their own fantasies, and that's absolutely fine. But I think confidence is the biggest thing that will stop anybody from making an audio. Okay, and the next question is from Darren Davis Jr. And he says, favourite human, no Garrus, computer game character, male and female, and why? Is it mainly just because they're awesome, or do you want to jump their polygons too? I do appreciate the preemption there. Okay, so female character first. I've always had an affinity for Lara Croft. I mean, I grew up playing her games and, you know, saw the evolution of her character and of the games themselves. I wouldn't say I'd like to jump her bones, but she's definitely a character that's very iconic, especially for people of my age and gamers, you know, who started young. So, yeah, I have to give a shout out to Lara Croft. As for male characters, I think one of my favourite male characters is Joel from The Last of Us. Every single one of those characters was well thought out. Their emotional range was crazy for a game. And I just loved Joel's character. I liked the way that, again, his character evolved throughout the game, in the way that he changed his priorities over the course of the games to the ending, which was spectacular. I am very, very much looking forward to the second installation. I'll have to find a PS4 first, but I will find some way of playing it. As for whether I would jump Joel's bones, more than likely, with that accent and that set of morals, then yeah, I would probably jump those bones in a heartbeat. Now, I've saved Nickel Silver's question for last because it ties in nicely to the little bit of book reading that I'm going to do at the end of this. And Nickel Silver asks, Vimes or Vetinari? Now, whilst they are both excellent characters and they are one of the longest running characters throughout the Discworld series, it's always going to be Vimes for me. I've adored Vimes from the first book that I've read, which is the one that I'm currently doing on Pillow Talk at the moment. And he's just, for every little girl who's had daddy issues, he would be the sort perfect sort of dad character. I've always imagined him played by Sean Pertwee. But he's a very down-to-earth character, and when you've got a down-to-earth character who is, you know, the avatar of justice in a place like Ankh-Morpork, you get somebody who does their very, very best to be good, but isn't, you know, completely above circumventing the rules to deliver justice, not so much in a thuggish manner, but in a sense of they don't let the red tape tie them, or they find a way around that red tape. And I absolutely adore Sam Vimes for that. So, Fruity Rumpus Factory wanted me to read out a passage or a favourite part from my favourite Terry Pratchett book, and that would be from Night Watch. Sam Vimes has found himself in the past, just before a revolution, and he is teaching his younger self how to be a copper. And in this particular scene, during the revolution, they break into the secret police headquarters. They are named as the Unmentionables, and it's where all the suspected revolutionaries have been taken and occasionally never seen again. All the watch houses were pretty much the same. Stone steps led down to the cellars. Vimes hurried down them, swung open a heavy door, and stopped. Cells never smelled all that good at the best of times. At the best of times, even at Treacle Mine Road, hygiene consisted of a bucket per cell and as much slopping out as Snelty felt inclined to do. But, at the worst of times, the cells below Treacle Mine Road never smelled of blood. The beast stirred. In this room there was a big wooden chair. In this room there was, by the chair, a rack. The chair was bolted to the floor. It had wide leather straps. The rack held clubs and hammers. In this room, that was all the furnishings. The floor was dark and sticky. Down the length of it, a gully ran to a drain. Boards had been nailed over the tiny window at street level. This wasn't a place where light was welcomed. And all the walls and even the ceiling were padded heavily with sacks stuffed with straw. Sacks had even been nailed to the door. This was a very thorough cell. Not even sound was meant to escape. A couple of torches did nothing at all for the darkness except make it dirty. Behind him, Vimes heard Nancy Ball throw up. In a strange kind of dream, he walked across the floor and bent down to pick up something that gleamed in the torchlight. It was a tooth. He stood up again. A closed wooden door led off one side of the cellar. On the other, a wider tunnel almost certainly led to the cells. Vimes took a torch out of its holder, handed it to Sam, and pointed along the tunnel. There were footsteps accompanied by a jingle of keys heading towards the door, and a light growing brighter underneath it. The beast tensed. Vimes dragged the largest club out of the rack and stepped swiftly to the wall beside the door. Someone was coming. Someone who knew about this room. Someone who called themselves a copper. Getting a firm two-handed grip, Vimes raised the club and looked across the stinking room and saw young Sam watching him. Young Sam with his bright shiny badge and face full of strangeness. Vimes lowered the club, leaned it delicately against the wall, and pulled the leather cosh from his pocket. Shackled, not quite understanding, the beast was dragged back into the night. A man stepped through the door, whistling under his breath, took a few steps into the room, saw young Sam, opened his mouth, and then fell fast asleep. He was a big man, and hit the cobbles heavily. He had a leather hood over his head and was naked to the waist. A big ring of keys hung from his belt. Vimes darted into the corridor behind the door and around a corner, burst into a small brightly lit room, and grabbed a man he found in there. This one was a lot smaller, and suppressed a scream as Vimes dragged him up out of his chair.
"And what does Daddy do at work all day, mister?" he roared.
The little man was bright. One look at Vimes's eye told him how short his future might be.
"I'm just a clerk, a clerk. I write things down," he protested.
He held up a pen by way of desperate demonstration. Vimes looked at the desk. There were compasses there, and other geometer's tools, symbols of Swing's insane sanity. There were books and folders stuffed with paperwork, and there was a yard-long steel ruler. He grabbed it in his spare hand and slammed it on the desktop. The heavy steel made a satisfying noise.
"And,"
he said, his face a few inches from the struggling man,
And I measure people. It's all in the captain's book. I just measure people. I don't do anything wrong. I'm not a bad man.
Again, the ruler slammed into the desk, but this time Vimes had twisted it, and the steel edge chopped into the wood.
Want me to cut you down to size, mister?
The little man's eyes rolled.
Please!
Is there any other way out of here? Vimes slapped the rule down on the desk. The flickers of eyes was enough. Vimes saw a doorway in the wall, almost lost in the wood panelling.
Good! Where does it come out?
Now Vimes was nose to nose with the man, who, in police parlance, was helping him with his inquiries.
You're all alone here, he said. You have no friends here. You sat and took notes for a torturer, a bloody torturer. And I see a desk, and it's got a desk drawer. And if you ever, ever want to hold a pen again, you'll tell me everything I want to know.
Warehouse, the man gasped. Next door.
Right, sir. Thank you, sir. You've been very helpful, said Vimes, lowering the limp body to the floor. Now, sir, I'm just handcuffing you to this desk for a moment, sir, for your protection.
From who?
Me. I'll kill you if you try to run away, sir.
Vimes hurried back to the main chamber. The torturer was still out cold. Vimes hauled him up into the chair and, with great effort, pulled off his hood and recognised the face. The face, yes, but not the person. That is, it was the kind of face you saw a lot of in Ankh-Morpork. Big, bruised, and belonging to someone who'd never quite learned that hitting people long after they'd lost consciousness was a wicked thing to do. He wondered if the man actually liked beating people to death. They often didn't think about it. It was just a job. Well, he wasn't about to ask him. He buckled him in with every strap, even the one that went across the forehead, pulling the last one tight just as the man came round. The mouth opened, and Vimes stuffed the hood into it. Then he took the key ring and locked the main door. That should ensure a little extra privacy. He met young Sam coming the other way as he headed for the cells. The boy's face was white in the gloom.
Found any? Said Vimes.
Oh, Sarge.
Yes?
Oh, Sarge. Sarge.
Tears were running down the Lance Constable's face. Vimes reached out and steadied himself. Sam felt as though there were no bones left in his body. He was trembling.
There's a woman in the last cell, and she... Sarge!
Try taking deep breaths, said Vimes. Not that this air is fit to breathe.
And there's a room right at the end, Sarge. Oh, Sarge, Nancy Ball fainted again.
You didn't, said Vimes, patting him gently on the back.
But there's...
Let's rescue who we can, shall we, lad?
But we were on the hurry-up wagon, Sarge.
What? Said Vimes. And then it dawned.
Oh, yes.
But we didn't hand anyone over, lad, he said. Remember?
But I've been on it before, Sarge. All the lads have. We just handed people over and went back to the watch-house for cocoa, Sarge.
Well, you had orders, said Vimes, for what good that did.
We didn't know.
Not exactly, thought Vimes. We didn't ask. We just shut our minds to it. People went in through that front door, and some of the poor devils came out through the secret door. Not always in one box. They hadn't measured up, nor did we.
So, this classically depicts why I love Vimes so much, because, left unchecked, yes, he could be the vigilante thug character quite easily, and there are a number of times where that is tested quite significantly, especially in this particular book. But it's that sense of the beast being chained, of there being a part of him that was much stronger than that urge to just, you know, kick the shit out of every problem that was in front of him. And I think it's what made Vimes such an attractive character to me. So I hope that was a decent ending to this AMA. I have to thank you all for such wonderful questions. It's nice to see so many people curious, and I hope I answered them to the best of my abilities. It has been amazing fun recording this, and I do advise anybody who's curious about doing it to do so. It's lots and lots of fun. So I am going to leave you now after my long-ass audio. I'm going to try and edit this down as much as I can, but I will probably put timestamps in if you just want to get to the answers of your questions. So until then, please have a wonderful day, and again, thank you very much for making this a wonderful experience.